the EFL. It's the Football League podcast that produces bangers and rockets every day of the year. Coming up, Leicester lose and Leeds find the route to victory. Wayne Woe as Tractor Boys harvest late point. Home Park is where the goals are. And Hotshot slaps Swindon in the cup. Powered by Quinbet. This is What the EFL. It's Monday. You know what that means. We've got our championship faces on today. We're going to give a little mention to the Football Association's Challenge Cup later. Plus, there's the glorious return of the Scouting Report. It's me, Matt Davis Adams. I've got Adrian Clark alongside me. Good morning.
Good morning, Matt. Morning, Sam. Looking forward to today. It'd be nice to do a little championship special. I've got a question for you from a listener. Stephen McClay was on Twitter, sent me a quiz question. Don't look at my social media. Which current championship player made his international debut in the same match that his current championship manager made his final international appearance? So on the face of it, you think, no, that's quite easy. I'll give you to the end of the show. Same to you, the listeners. See if you can get it.
All right, Sam Parkin, anything springing to mind immediately on that? I'm absolutely clueless. I was going to say Curtis Davis, then I remembered he's not even playing in the championship.
Yeah, that was my initial thought process. I'm just going to write the question down because I didn't really understand it. So,
it's the current championship player made his first game, made his international debut as a player in the same match that his current manager in the championship made his final international appearance.
So, lovely, like it.
Good question, I didn't get it right. Right. So can anyone out there do it? I wonder.
All right. Probably not me, but we'll return to that at the end of the pod. Before we get into our championship review, how about this? Our friends at Quinbet have enhanced their UK welcome offer where you can now get a free bet worth up to £35. It is for new customers that sign up only. You can check out the full terms and conditions at quinbet.com/promotions or use the link provided in the description of this podcast. It's 18 plus, and remember, always gamble responsibly. Okay, let's get to the championship. And we will kick off under the Friday night lights at the King Power.
James gives his teammates the signal. Curls the ball in. Headed goal attempt. Yes! Leeds United take the lead. Woo-hoo! That away end has absolutely erupted here. First header save, the follow-up poked in. And Leeds United are in front here at Leicester. Leicester City 0, Leeds 1.
And that's how it finished. Jorginho Rutter's goal just before the hour, giving Leeds the points and ending Leicester's 9-game winning streak. Leicester still have an 11-point buffer between them and the Whites, who are third. Adrian, I guess this is significant for Leeds, probably not so for Leicester, just a bump in the road, but it really feels like Daniel Farke's got Leeds firing now.
Yeah, it's easy to say in hindsight because I didn't tip them or anything like that, but Leeds, I think, are a team that might be well suited to playing a Leicester. They're pretty good at pressing at the right times. They're electric on turnovers, aren't they? And as it proves in this game, they're not bad from set pieces as well. So yeah, they're good opponents. They're bad opponents for this style of Leicester City. But yeah, no, they needed it, didn't they? And I think they'll certainly have their eye on a top two finish. That'll be the goal for Leeds United. Deserve a lot of credit for their off-the-ball work. Obviously, great concentration. If you're going to beat Leicester City, you need amazing discipline and concentration. And they had it, didn't they? Obviously, Struyck and Rodon, very, very good at centre-half. Byron and Archie Gray at full-back, excellent. But I think the two central midfielders, Ethan Ampadu and Glenn Kamara, were magnificent in the game. And deserve to be on the winning side. Well played, Leeds United. I do think Leicester missed Ndidi. That was a big miss for them. Cassaday came in and wasn't as effective as Ndidi might have been. I wouldn't lose too much sleep if I was Leicester City here. It's just one of those nights where you've played okay. You could easily have scored a brilliant goal at the end there, but for that unbelievable save. What a save that was from Melier. Just brilliant. One of the best saves I've seen across any competition this season. It was just a brilliant claw out from him. So yeah, Leicester could easily have snatched a point here, but wasn't to be. My only other thought process on Leicester is Fatawu. He looks a player. What a goal that would have been. I mean, flicking it over the defender and then the strike, the quality of the curler was sublime. And this is a teenager. He he is insanely talented, and I think he was pretty good on a tough night for Leicester City.
So that Meslier save, Sam, that was the only shot on target that Leicester managed in the game. Clueless oafs like me, you've never played the game, TM, will say something like, Enzo Maresca might actually find this quite useful as a little reminder to his players that they're not going to have it all their own way. Is that actually a thing, or is it more useful to just get points?
No, I think it's a thing, yeah. Yeah, probably for the bigger games, he may have to come up with a slightly different plan. It's food for thought, isn't it? And he's got good options in the forward positions. And I think Vardy lasted, 60, 65 minutes or something. I think the signing of Rodon could prove to be a really important moment for Leeds in their hope of getting promoted. And Clarkie touched on the fullbacks. That's the area that I've been concerned about from a Leeds perspective, but we didn't see that the other night. So that's real credit to the way that they shut down Leicester, that they limited them to few chances, and they're going to improve there. I think they've got Firpo to possibly come back in on the left, and of course Jed Spence to come back in on the right. So Leeds will be even more fuller package when those guys return, and it's difficult to see too many weaknesses there. But from a Leicester perspective, they've got the depth, they've got the quality in the attacking positions to change, haven't they, from game to game? And that's what's, you know, I go back and I harp on about Reading way back when a lot, but that's what's so different about this Leicester team if they're going to emulate what Reading were able to do with 106 points, because you don't know what the team's going to be, in essence. They've got so many good players in the squad. He'll be able to change it and he'll be able to tinker with the system. So, yeah, I'm sure they'll probably approach some of the other big games in the division slightly differently. Nothing to concern me here, though. It's been a phenomenal start from all three teams, really. Leeds are just unfortunate that Leicester and Ipswich have started in this fashion. Clarkie, sorry, quickly, just nip it in the bud. Is the question, the team involved, is it Southampton?
Yes.
Shall I go for it then?
Yeah, go for it.
I presume it's, Russell Martin, Scotland, and there's two to choose from. It's going to be Armstrong, isn't it?
Oh.
Well done, Sam. That's really impressive.
I mean, you've ruined it for the listeners, but it's fine. Like that is a tremendous...
Do you know what, mate? Do you know what? I thought it was Jay Adams. And then literally as I was speaking there, I thought, is there another Scottish player? Because that doesn't really add up.
Honestly.
Tally up.
So maybe only a Scot could have got that.
First name, Stuart, yeah? Stuart
Armstrong, yeah. I mean, I know you're not a proper Scot, but you kind of are a Scot. So, yeah, well played. Unbelievable.
Thank you. It's good, isn't it?
I mean, you've won the podcast, basically. It doesn't matter what you do from here on in, Sam.
I started doubting myself that Russell Martin was Scottish as well, halfway through saying that to you there, mate, as well. So it's even more impressive.
Well, look, let's see if Sam can continue this hot streak throughout the rest of the show. You mentioned Ipswich there. They left it late to harness a point at Birmingham and leave Wazza still waiting for his first win as City Supremo, although he does at least have a point on the board now. Marcus at the double here as it finished all square at St Andrews. Here's Kieran McKenna reflecting on the game and making up a new word.
The way that second half started, I would have fancied us to come back and win it. But yeah, it's a moment where we had a big chance to go 1-1. They break up the other end. To be fair, we didn't do well enough with a long ball. But after that, there's, of course, a massive bit of disfortune on our half to concede the goal. And I said to go 2-0 down, then when you've come out really well at the start of the second half, that could easily have flared us, or we could have went in a different direction. And we didn't. And that's something to be really, really proud of. And the supporters as well, fantastic. Mm-hmm. You know, 2-0 down, right behind the boys, right with it, encouraging us to that end, and a massive part in getting the performance we did and getting the point.
Disfortune. It's like disappointment and misfortune all rolled into one.
Not as good as my Sturgid, though, is it?
No, it did make me think of you when he said it. That's sort of why I included
Nicola
it.
Sturgid. Yeah, I remember her. Yeah.
This, Sam, I think feels big for your old club, Ipswich. I'll tell you for why, because they were beaten fairly handily, weren't they, by Fulham in the week. I know Fulham are a Premier League side, but if Ipswich had lost on Saturday, that would have been their first back-to-back defeats in more than a year. As it is, if they can win at Rotherham on Tuesday, they'll only be a point behind Leicester and 10 ahead of Leeds in third. So it's you know, showing their powers of recovery, which we haven't needed to see from them much this season, and a different side to their game here.
Yeah, no, that's a real valid point. And also the powers of recovery in that game. I haven't had a chance to see the statistics this morning, but I can't recall them coming from behind too often this season. They haven't needed to. So to see them up against it and recover to take a point. Really encouraging, I think, for both teams, you know, on the day, really. So much better from Birmingham. I didn't probably anticipate this happening so quickly. I thought there was shoots of recovery at St Mary's the other day, but this was a very good opening half from them. I was with an Ipswich fan actually on Saturday evening at the Bromley Blackpool game that I'm going to talk about later. And I just had a little look after half an hour. I don't think they'd had a shot, maybe slightly earlier than that. Birmingham was so quick out of the traps. And if you look at the profile of that front four, if you like, the number 10 and the front three now, all very energetic, no real height or power there. So that negates the option to probably play aerially and play long. Stansfield down the middle, you know, is going to be so energetic with and without the ball. So I think they just compressed the game really high and caused Ipswich loads of problems early on. And the obvious issue for Wayne Rooney is probably the depth isn't quite there. And to maintain the intensity was too tough for Ask. And I think Kieran McKenna said he almost planned for it. I'm not sure I'm going to take him on that, because I think that's quite a risky strategy to allow your team to be two or even worse behind before you start playing. But yeah, much better from Birmingham. And even looking at some of the alterations, James in central midfield, Awu playing at centre half, you know, some of the problems that I felt were there in the previous starting 11s, they've kind of been changed already by Wayne Rooney to make them probably better in terms of their use of the ball. So yeah, this was a good performance. Couldn't quite see it through. And I tell you what, there's been a clip doing the rounds on social media of Marcus Harness in a warm-up crashing a left-footed shot against the bar and then spanking in a right-footed volley on the rebound. One of the most two-footed players, I would suggest, in the championship, and probably one of the only players that could execute that on essentially his wrong foot, that left-footed volley. So brilliant equaliser. And yeah, another test that Ipswich Town have been able to come through. Mm-hmm.
So for Birmingham then, Clarkie, and specifically Rooney, it's real Frank Lampard's Derby vibes about Birmingham City, isn't it? It's got to be Wayne Rooney's Birmingham at all times. But is the key for him to kind of be in touch with the playoffs come the turn of the year? They're 6 points off it now. If they're, say, I don't know, anywhere between 6 and 3 points off it, is that when he can then justifiably go to the board and say, right, I need some players in January, please? As Sam's talking about the lack of depth they're suffering from.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, he's just got to stay in the race. That's the aim, isn't it? Playoffs, I think, this season. I mean, the top two is kind of almost done. You feel like it's, you know, there's four teams in the race. There's the three that came down, plus Ipswich Town in the race for the top two. I just don't see anyone else getting into those slots. So, yeah, it has to be playoffs. But, yeah, this I agree with Sam. This was a big upturn from the Blues. His team selection went a long, long way. I think he slightly changed the system a little bit, more of a sort of 4-2-2-2. But he got players into the team that are exciting. You know, he got Miyoshi in there. He got Bakuna, who had a really good game. Burke and Stansfield. And at one time or another, in his short reign, I think almost all of those guys have been on the bench. He's left them out. In this game, he got them into the same team and they did excellently. I think Ethan Laird made a massive difference. I rate this kid. Ever since I saw him a couple of years ago, he's a really, really dynamic, vibrant, attacking fullback. And when he plays, I think Birmingham are going to be a different proposition to if he's missing. And maybe it's no coincidence that they weren't as good towards the end of this game when he came off as a precaution, because he's had so many injury problems. So yeah, no, great day for Birmingham. By the way, Sam was onto something. This was the first goal away from home that Ipswich have conceded before half time this season. Incredible. They've had quite a few away games, and to have gone in with a clean sheet in all of them up until this game is a clear sign of excellent game management and temperament within this team. And I think temperament is the key word here, because at 2-0 down, a lot of teams would have panicked and Ipswich didn't. And their subs made a heck of a difference, didn't they? So yeah, but a little word on Dane Scarlett, who I saw on loan at Pompey last year, wasn't great. You know, lost a bit of confidence. I think this might have been his best contribution involved in the two goals. Brilliant piece of skill. I loved it. Did you see the shuffle, Sam, inside the box? Little shuffle, completely did the defender. Really, really smooth. And his was the pass that released Hutchison in behind for that equaliser as well. So, yeah, well done to him.
Yeah, scored for England, didn't he, at the Under 20 World Cup? I feel like I've been watching him in PLT for about 15 years, Dane Scarlett, but I can't have been because he would have been about 3 years old at that point. Anyway, let's move on, but we'll stay in the West Midlands. Adrian pointed out it's about time we covered West Brom, so that's exactly what we're going to do. They beat Hull 3-1 at the Hawthorns, nicely tucked into the playoff places in fifth, to be precise. Goodness me, Clarkie, they had a helping hand to go 1-0 up, didn't they? John Michael Seri, not very good, giving it straight to Jeb Wallace.
Yeah, I mean, we're seeing so many of these goals, aren't we? Goals that just wouldn't have existed back in the day, you know, where teams are, they're making some unbelievable choices in terms of the risks that they take on the edge of their own box. And it just wasn't on, was it? It wasn't on to play out from the back in the way that Hull tried it. It was just a slightly off pass from Seri, gives it straight to Jed Wallace, and bang, you're 1-0 down and chasing the game. So yeah, that wasn't great. I think this was a good day for Corberan in terms of tactics. He was happy to let Hull have it, backed his players to control it, keep them at arm's length, and then to strike hard and fast. When they had the opportunities, they did that. It was a brilliant day for Grady Diangana. I mean, what a frustrating player he's been, because I think we all know he's got unbelievable talent. It can be a wizard in possession of the ball.
There was uproar when he left West Ham, wasn't there? Even Mark Noble came out and said, what are we doing selling this guy?
He has Premier League ability. He just, for one reason or another, has struggled badly for consistency, has never been able to nail down a regular spot, but in this match, phenomenal. Yeah, absolutely brilliant. So this was a great day for West Brom. I've got a few stats that are interesting. The reason I think Corberan backed his players to handle Hull's possession is that they've only conceded 8 goals in open play all season. That's second only to Leicester City.
That's 7 of their last 10 games as well.
Yeah, it's really, really impressive in terms of facing shots. I mean, it's amazing who's leading, by the way. It's Watford in terms of the fewest shots faced in open play, but West Brom are second. So they're very good at limiting the opposition. What they haven't been so good at is converting the chances. But yeah, they did in this game. And this stat is my best of the week. Here it is. West Brom have trailed in matches for less time this season than Leicester City. I mean, who would have thought it? I mean, it's just remarkable. They've been behind for 11.3% of the season, which is just phenomenal. They're managing games very, very well. They've conceded the first goal 3 times, and they've played 15 matches. So well coached, and if they find the clinical edge like they did in this game, they're going to definitely be in the playoffs.
Yeah, Corberan knows his onions, championship wise, that's for sure. As for Hull, Sam, Liam Rossini celebrating a year in charge, which is an achievement in and of itself for a championship manager. There's not too much to be concerned about for them after this, is there? They'd won back-to-back games. They're tucked in ninth. That's probably slightly above par for them at this stage of the season.
Yeah, I would say so. I wasn't optimistic about their chances, to be honest, start of the season. I think I remember saying as much on the preview pod. So they surprised me. I think Clarkie called them like the possession kings or whatever a fortnight ago, and you probably wouldn't have envisaged them having so much control in a game against one of the really fancied sides. So I think that's credit to him. And it's probably, in the wake of this result, a real show of respect from Carlos Corberan, I think, in the way that they tactically set up and also changed their system. They've been a bit of a, when I saw them the other week, they're a bit of a hybrid kind of back three, because they have Furlong invariably on the right hand side and Phillips has been playing as a left wing back, but here it was more of a back four, and Jed Wallace, who's been playing as a 10 or wide, played centrally with Thomas Asante. So I think this was actually I think they haven't played a kind of orthodox back four since the start of September. So I think all of this was Carlos Corberan back in kind of that Huddersfield mould where he's so good at counteracting another clever opposition manager. So I think that's enormous credit to a young coach in Liam Rossini, who, yeah, is doing a really good job. No worries about them at all. Probably the one frustration here is for all the possession and good play, especially in the first half where they were by far and away the better side. They didn't test Alex Palmer enough. I think there wasn't much on either goal, actually, if you look at the stats. Just 3 saves, I think, that Palmer had to make. But, no kind of gilt-edged chances for Hull City. So, yeah, transforming all that really good play, good patterns into better opportunities on the opponent's goals, especially in the big games where you know, you're going to be hard faced to create, you know, too much of note. So that'd be the only disappointing thing in the aftermath of this defeat.
Elsewhere, a deeply entertaining game at Deepdale, where Preston and Coventry shared five goals, but Preston hogged the points. Anthony Taylor got busted down from the Premier League to officiate this one. Sam, what do you make of this? Mark Robbins slagged him post-match, said the second Preston goal was offside. But this feels like it's not a punishment that is fair on the Championship, if you know what I mean. Like, if he's made a mistake, so it was a penalty call that he got wrong in the Premier League, surely you just sit him out for a game rather than saying, we think that the Championship is inferior to the Premier League, so your punishment is to go and referee in that. It just feels wrong.
Yeah, I get what you're saying, actually. Yeah, I don't want the level of the Championship to be, not mocked is not the right terminology, is it? But it seems to be lesser. Yeah, belittled, yeah. Yeah. What was his mistake in the Premier League? I mean, you two are ref watch, aren't you? I couldn't
care less. Wolves Newcastle game, wasn't it? That daft penalty where he sort of pulled out of the challenge and
I mean, Wolves have had terrible decisions, haven't they, the two? Neither of them were pens, where they were just players playing for the decisions. Nah, you're right, Matt. Yeah, shouldn't be given a game. Shouldn't be given a game. Or, I don't know, just have a chat with him. He's a great ref, isn't he? He's one of the best, isn't he? He's perceived great to be one of the best. Why does he have to be punished? What are we, at school? I mean, yeah, it's not for me, probably. Just get him running the line at Palace. Run the line at Palace next week, you know what I mean? Take some stick from...
It's the mindset coming into the game at Preston. He's going to be on a downer, isn't he? He feels like the tail's between his legs before he's blown a whistle. It's not a great mentality to go.
So the managers know that they can prey on him, right? I mean, during the game, you could use that against him. And post-match, like Mark Robbins has here, you know, kind of implying, why have we got this guy if he's not good enough for the Premier League? He's done before he started, hasn't he?
He's out of form. He's out of form. He's not at it. He's not at it at the moment.
Can referees not be at it? Absolutely. I reckon that they can absolutely be out of form.
Yeah, we all can in our jobs, can't we?
Well, anyway, this is true.
On to the game. Preston coming from behind to get their first win in eight. They're back in the playoff places. Clarkie, do you want to talk about them or Coventry being in exactly the same position as they were this time last
year? Yeah, give me something to talk about other than refs, because I've just butchered the show there.
Well, we should have seen this coming, because Coventry haven't won at Deepdale since 1910, which is a remarkable run of games. They haven't beaten them in any match in 19 meetings. So proper bogey team vibes here from Coventry against Preston. I think a couple of things with Preston, they used Alan Brown, who started the season as sort of one of two number 10s. They dropped him in to be an orthodox central midfielder in this game alongside Ben Whiteman, and he was very, very good. He is a talented player, Alan Brown, and I think when he's at it, we're on the subject of being at it, when he's at it, Preston are a significantly better team. My mate Osmajic scored a goal, and he made a bit of a difference. But for Cov, obviously four straight losses, three of those have been away from home. Bit of pressure on the keeper, Ben Wilson, after his mistake against West Brom. So that's not great. And Robin said after the game that a lot of his players are struggling a little bit mentally. So basically they've lost confidence. And that's something he's going to have to solve. He's going to have to get some confidence into those players this week. I'd never fear for Coventry under Mark Robbins, because he's such a sensible manager, and that he's turned them around over and over again, as he did last season, as you've pointed out, Matt. So they'll be fine. What'll be interesting is to see if he sticks with his 4-3-3. So at half time, he brought on Ellis Sims, ditched the sort of, I think it was a 3-4-1-2, and went 4-3-3 with his three strikers up top. Went with Godden, he went with Sims down the right, and Hadji right as well. So, and it worked. So, you know, to a degree. So I'd be interested to see if he carries that on.
Testing triple header coming up for PNE next, Sam. They go to Blackburn, which is obviously a massive game for them. Then they got Cardiff, who are good. And then they go to Middlesbrough. Do you see them hanging around the playoffs all season, or are they going to drift away as they sort of tend to do?
Well, I thought this was a massive result, actually. I thought it was a bit of a nasty game for both, to be honest, because Coventry were in desperate need of a performance, preferably some points. And Preston hadn't won in seven, which has crept up on me majorly, because we were waxing lyrical about them early part of the season. And I know they've had that hellish run where they played the three of the better sides in the space of 7 days. What would make me optimistic is probably the return of some major players and the depth of the squad now. You had Keane on the bench the other day. Obviously, Ched Evans has recovered now from that really nasty issue that he had. Ledson was on the bench as well. I really like the makeup of the 11. They've still got a couple of left-sided centre-halves out, hence why Kean Best, the young lad we spoke about early part of the season playing left wing-back, he played at left centre-half and did really well. But you've got Cunningham and Hughes who are, you know, experienced boys and a big reason for, you know, that clean sheet and defensive record last season. So there's more to come. There's the squad's got more depth to follow. But yeah, I'd be optimistic that they can hang around the top half. I'm not sure about playoffs still. I thought just a couple of other things. I thought Ryan Lowe's comments in the lead-up were quite interesting about Frank Jensen, the midfield lad who's come in and done pretty well this season. He spoke about him not really giving enough maybe without the ball. And yeah, quite openly, you know, gave him a little bit of stick in the lead-up to this game, but he was in from the off and played well by all accounts. So maybe that was a masterstroke from the manager. Their attacking statistics as well, I didn't realise kind of their XG-wise, I think fourth lowest in the division, and I think that's been a little bit problematic. So they'll be pleased that they've scored three and created a lot more in this game against Coventry. The Coventry, Clarkey touched on the goalkeeper issue and the shape. If there was ever a game that Hadji Wright was going to get on the score sheet, I knew it. And I was like looking at my phone on Saturday because he missed that gaping opportunity, didn't he, in the previous game?
Yeah.
And that defeat against West Brom, but played well. And I think the fans actually sang his name straight after he missed that chance. I knew he was going to score a couple. So if I was a betting man, well, should have put a few quid on it. Because yeah, when I saw his name, you know, when you're like, oh, no.
Yeah. Is it Hadji Wright, right? Hadji Wright, right?
That's just what I was thinking.
It's got to be, hasn't it? Is it?
Ian Wright, yeah.
Yeah. But is that the chant for Hadji?
Don't know.
Okay. If you know, get in contact with us at AFL. What
I do know that Stuart Armstrong and Russell Martin played in the Faroe Islands for Scotland in 2016.
I'm a little bit fuming with you because I wanted the listeners to tackle that, and you've gone very early. But I suppose you get a bonus point for that. So yeah, we'll let it slide.
Right, last championship game we're going to talk about: Plymouth and Middlesbrough sharing the goals and the points. 3-3 it finished here. Get you what the AFL bingo card out because I'm going to run some distances by you. The travelling supporters and Middlesbrough who went to Exeter and to Plymouth. This is my calculations, Clarkey. Over 23 hours on the road, covering nearly 1,500 miles. That's one in the eye for the Proclaimers, if nobody else. What do you want to talk about from this game? Morgan Whittaker at it again. Michael Carrick fuming that they didn't get a man sent off when Mikael Miller brought down Isaiah Jones. Argyle, where they should be 6 points above the drop. Borough still knocking on the door of the playoffs, but dropping down to 12th. Lots.
Well, that's me and Sam Dunn. You've just covered it, haven't you? I have got here on my notes to mention the fans. 1,644 of them travelled. It was a tremendous backing. And I worked it out. I looked on the internet. 376 miles it is from Middlesbrough to Plymouth. The same distance, right, as London, exact same distance as London to Kaiserslautern in southwest Germany. I mean, that's the level of how far they travelled. That is incredible. So well done to them. And they should have had, you know, they should have been reduced to 10 men. Plymouth, no doubt about it. But Mikael Miller was chasing Isaiah Jones. He was the last man. It was just outside the box, so no penalty. But when that's the case, you have to go, unfortunately. And I was astonished that Darren England didn't give that. And I felt really, yeah, quite sorry for Middlesbrough there. Yeah, it was, I mean, Middlesbrough, they're getting better, aren't they, going forward? They're getting better full stop, Coburn scoring, and they're scoring more goals. But they are little bit weak and fragile at the back. I think that much is clear to see. I think in this game, Vandenberg struggled a bit at right back. And the bottom line is they've conceded the same number of goals as Sheffield Wednesday, who are having a stinker of a season at the bottom of the championship. So that, unless that gets fixed, Borough won't be in the playoff race this time around. So yeah, they've got a little bit of work to do. But yeah, Plymouth were great. And going forward, they were great. Finn Azaz was probably the pick of the bunch here. What a goal. Absolutely gorgeous, wasn't it? The flick from Barley Mumba, and then he curls one top bins. Yeah, really, they're an entertaining side, aren't they? Especially on home turf. There's no fear factor with Plymouth. That's what I love about Schumacher and his team. No respecters of reputation or name. They will just back themselves against whoever they come up against, which, yeah, makes them sort of a neutral's favourite, I think.
Only one win in seven, Sam, for Argyle, but they've got a six-point buffer between themselves and the relegation zone. They got enough to stay out of trouble, haven't they? I mean, scoring plenty of goals is one way to go about that, and they're pretty good in that department.
I feel like we're having this conversation most weeks about Plymouth. My answer will be the same about Argyle, sorry. Yeah, they're gonna stay up. I'm 90% sure of that.
They've scored more goals than every team in the playoff places.
Yeah, I think only Ipswich have scored more at home, haven't they? I think Ipswich have scored 21, 22, and Plymouth up to 20 now. And remember, there's no Hardy or Bundu in the lineup at the weekend. Ben Wayne played down the middle. I'm not going to have a go at him because I think he's a talented player, actually. But he had 9 touches, so he was taken off.
Is he not a striker? Is he not a natural number 9?
No, I think he is, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. He was taken off midway through the second half. It was the fewest, obviously, out of both teams. I think even Morgan Rogers came on in for 10 minutes for them and had as many touches. So he wasn't involved. So obviously no surprise that Hardy and Bundy will come back in. But no, Plymouth are a good side. And, you know, with the goal scorers in particular at the weekend, they've got so much talent going forward. Yeah, defensively, they're not perfect, but the home record alone will, in my opinion, see them stay in the division. But they want to shore things up, because I think Middlesbrough went there and had 20 shots at the at the weekend and were probably marginally the better side. I think you'd probably look at the goalkeeper, certainly for the Whittaker, was it the equaliser, the free kick that went all the way, and you'd have to look at Dieng for that. And I just thought, yeah, Middlesbrough a little bit slow to get out to Finnazaz as well for that goal. The right hand side of Middlesbrough, I think they had a centre half essentially playing right back, so a few issues defensively for them. But yeah, no concerns about Plymouth staying in the division, and not really concerned about Middlesbrough. I think they'll make a good fist to getting in those playoffs again this year, despite the slow start.
Yeah, we should mention Sam Greenwood. He had a really good game, maybe his best for Borough. He's coming into a bit of form for them. And on that Whittaker equaliser, I've taken that free kick hundreds of times, left-footed from the right wing. It's a cross, but you're in effect shooting for the far stick. That's what I used to do every single time I had one. I'm basically aimed for the far post, a little bit of curl, so that if it missed everyone, it went straight in. And every now and again, it does. And I always think that's a really hard one for a keeper. They'll always get blamed. Like Sam's just sort of dug him out a little bit. But I think it's a really hard one for a keeper to say. Just a really awkward delivery.
Just so that I can make use of every note I made for this game, and because Clarkie mentioned him there, Sam Greenwood, I find it odd that a player gets loaned from one side challenging for promotion to another expecting to be challenging for promotion. Is that, I don't know, a bit negligent or disrespectful of Leeds to loan Sam Greenwood to Middlesbrough, or am I just overthinking this and it's a player who they'd rather get some minutes for somebody if it's not going to be them?
I think it's quite nice, no? Rather than him not get any game time. I mean, they've got enough options, haven't they?
But you know, if it was like, if he'd gone to Sheffield Wednesday or somebody down the bottom of the table, fair enough. But what happens if he gets 15 goals for Middlesbrough and they, I don't know, on the last day, pip Leeds to second place or something?
I don't know. Maybe it's confidence in the owners and the manager at Leeds that they're not going to be, what's the terminology? They're not going to be a threat, I suppose. I think they're going to be enough points ahead of them not to be concerned by them. I don't know. I think it's quite nice. I think it's quite nice to let him to go and play somewhere, where he's going to enjoy himself, big crowd, similar to what he's going to get.
Pretty local, not far away, is it?
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah. All right. Back your manager and the lads that he wants around the first team in the short term.
Well, we need more niceness in this world. Don't normally associate it with Leeds United, so let's give it a look.
You're looking for a problem where there isn't one, Matt, aren't you, basically? Just the reason.
What a troublemaker. Yeah, just trying to get...
Got refs, like...
Yeah. He's all about the clicks these days, David.
Yeah, I'm on point. Right, that's the Championship. We'll have a brief chat about some FA Cup shocks next. Right, Sam. It's your old mob, the club you're most closely associated with. I've got this down as a genuine contender for the maddest FA Cup game ever. Swindon 4, Aldershot 7. For one, that's a score that I don't think I've ever heard before. Aldershot were 3-0 up inside 10 minutes. They get to 7-0 before Swindon wake up. This comes days after Mike Flynn gets a new contract. Following it, the owner, Clem Morfuni, has to put a statement on the website apologising for the result, refuting rumours the club is up for sale and saying he has paid the wages on time. If you have to say that, that's not usually a very good sign. Here's Opta. Aldershot Town are the first non-league team to score 7 or more goals against a Football League side in an FA Cup match competition proper. Extraordinary stuff, isn't it? I was amazed that there were Swindon supporters still there at the end and that they were actually cheering their team's goals.
Yeah, it's crazy, wasn't it? Got a few texts from people I haven't heard from for a while. What's going on there? Yeah, it's bizarre. I'm not up for apologies, really, at any stage. Just, I don't see it. I know it's a bizarre result and it's embarrassing.
Yeah. We had a bad game, yeah.
When it's National League, but let's get it right. The priority is the league. Of course it is. We know that. The only sore thing is the punters that have gone to the game, obviously, and it's not great for them to see that. And obviously, it would have been lovely for Swindon to progress and get Manchester City again like they did 2 years ago. That's, in essence, what it's about for the clubs. Let's get it right. You're not going to get to the latter stages, barring a miracle, barring Wickham 2000, 2001, the glory, the heady glory years. So it's a shame, but yeah, Swindon have had a horrendous record in the FA Cup, apart from obviously drawing City a few years ago when they made it through to the third round. So I don't know what went on. He changed the setup basically after 10 minutes when they were 3-0 down, but the damage was done. Yeah, a few players were kind of playing out of position. The quality of their goals were amazing, and Aldershot played some good stuff by all accounts. Kean Harries, the centre-half, I think he might have been the captain, was at Swindon last year, just for the season, come from Bristol Rovers. Of course, he got a goal going back to the County Ground. And yeah, I think Aldershot need to take enormous credit. As for the stuff off the pitch, I wouldn't want to speculate, really. There's clearly issues, financial issues. Some supporters are, a little bit concerned about the owner. And that's bizarre, considering the love that he was getting from all angles 2 years ago. People couldn't get enough of them. So it's a little bit disappointing and upsetting to see it potentially turning a little bit sour. But I think all it is at the moment is speculation about the club being up for sale. I think there's maybe been an interested party. That seems to be the noise coming out of the club in the last 24 hours. And just as luck would have it, I'm going to Colchester v Swindon tomorrow night. So I'll let you know more next week. But yeah, it's embarrassing. But yeah, if Michael Flynn gets him in the playoffs this year, that will be the real quiz. And more pertinently, he needs more players. And I think this probably, if you looked at the bench at the weekend, to be honest, because I've not been covering Swindon much this year, you know, three of the lads, senior players that I recognise, the rest, they're lads at the youth team. So they're short, especially defensively. And that's where Aldershot got their joy at the weekend. Yeah.
Someone tipped them on a betting podcast as his long shot of the week. So, they made me look very clever, Aldershot. But one of the reasons I picked them was because of Swindon's poor home record. You know, poor record in the FA Cup against non-league teams of late. You know, they've had a cup been dumped out a couple of times in recent seasons. And I know the matches we're going to talk about, they all have a theme. They're all quite big grounds that were pretty empty. And I just think that is actually a real negative for the teams up against highly motivated opposition. So we saw Swindon lose, Charlton an embarrassing draw, Barnsley an embarrassing draw. The crowds were tiny. So many empty seats. And I think that, that does make a difference. I do.
Bring back kids for a quid. You mentioned Charlton then, Clarkey. Mm. They drew 1-1. I was so pleased I get to say this. Cray Valley Paper Mills. It's got to be one of the best team names in English football. 117 league places between them. Only 3 miles geographically. Nothing to separate them at the Valley. Depending on who you believe, they took either 1,200 or 2,000 away supporters. Average home gate is 150. Got through 8 qualifying rounds to get to this stage. And it was Kyrell Lisby, son of former Charlton and Cray Valley man Kevin, with the assist for the OG equaliser. I suspect, like Mike Flynn, although I didn't read his post-match quotes, Michael Appleton taking the blame for this one, Adrian, after making 11 changes. We've got to praise Cray Valley Paper Mills, but this is inexcusable from Charlton, isn't it?
It is humiliating. This is one of the smallest teams you could ever imagine being in the first round of the FA Cup proper, around the corner. Yeah, it's they should have wiped the floor with the paper mill, shouldn't they? It's yeah, it is humiliating, but yeah, luckily they got away with it. I mean, obviously you need a bit of fortune if you're the underdog, and they had a bit of that. The goalkeeper was quite inspired. Some of the finishing was poor, but well done to the non-leaguers here, because even though they made 11 changes, Charlton's starting 11 was still a very strong side. They had more than enough there to see them off with ease, but they didn't rise to the occasion, and they conceded early, remember, Cray Valley. And I've been in teams where you've been in situations like that against the league team, and you can fold, but no sign of them folding there. And the replay is going to be a bit tasty, isn't it? That's going to be proper interesting. Yeah, I don't know whether they'll be able to play at their home ground, but getting a ticket for that one is going to be like gold dust.
Greenwich Borough Derby, I believe that was the first one of that regard. And I can't believe neither of you have mentioned the guy who got the assist.
Yeah, Lisby, yeah, yeah. Well, he did mention it. Kevin Lisby's son, yeah.
Sorry, I was still thinking about Anthony Taylor. Yeah.
You're looking like, you look a bit like Anthony Taylor, don't you? Yeah, I just realised that.
Because he's bald, yeah. That's good.
Sam, do you want to say Cray Valley Paper Mills, just so that you didn't get to say it?
Cray Valley Paper Mills. Who are the Mills? Millers.
I hope for their sake that some of those 1,200 to 2,000 supporters who went start turning up for the odd home game if they only get 150. Horsham might be drawing bigger crowds too. In the seventh tier, they got a draw against League One side Barnsley. What a thriller this was, Sam. Horsham 1-0 down, 2-1 up, 3-2 down before they equalise late on. You can hammer Barnsley if you like, but that shows some real character from the non-leaguers to keep coming back.
Yeah, I think they had four shots, didn't they, and scored three goals. But I'm not going to hammer Barnsley. They had 26 attempts, nearly as good as Walsall's 736 attempts at Sheppey on Friday night. So, I think they owe a debt of gratitude to Carey, I think his name was. He made some amazing saves in goal for Horsham. I think they're seventh tier, aren't they? Great standard of goals in this game as well. Jallo's goal, the 17-year-old for Barnsley, who came over a few years ago from Benfica, I understand. Bit of a culture shock for him, I'd imagine. But some goal off his left foot. And Tom Richards coming on and getting the equaliser. I think he was a sub. So, yeah, another amazing story. And, yeah, makes a mockery of the potential to scrap the replays, because you could see from all the footage how much the Horsham supporters enjoyed this. It was a, magnificent game. Great result for him.
Good on them. Probably all get tonked in the replays, but at least they've had their moments. All right, next up, the glorious return of the Scouting Report. Right, Adrian, you're up first here. You've chosen a player who has trodden that well-worn path from Sao Paulo to Norwich.
Yeah, look, there's a lot of negative noise and vibes around Norwich City at the moment. Understandably, another bad defeat against Blackburn on Sunday. David Wagner, we half thought might have got sacked by now, but at the time of recording, he's still the gaffer. Mike Shewell, who covered the game for TalkSport, who I know, texted me afterwards and said that he's never known a player as down as Kenny McLean was when he spoke to him after that game. So, yeah, it's not good times for Norwich. But in terms of the scouting report, I want to focus on a positive, maybe the positive at Carrow Road at the moment, apart from Jonathan Rowe, it's Gabriel Sara. I think he's a real player. I do. I think that in the right team, he can be a very special talent, actually. He's got a little bit of flair about him. He works hard. He will get stuck in and make tackles. But the thing is he's got an unbelievable left foot. It's just magnificent. We saw that at St Mary's. If you remember, he spanked a rocket into the top corner very, very early on in the season. And he's got five assists. I think three of those assists were left-footed set pieces, just absolutely on the money. And the goal, some of the goals he scored have been classy as well. There was one recently where he drops a shoulder. I think it was against Leeds. Yeah, it was Leeds where he beat about four men inside the box. Jinky run, spanks it hard into the roof of the net. He's got unbelievable talent. He breaks into the box from central midfield. So he'll gamble. He often plays as one of two in this sort of very attacking midfield that Wagner sets up with him and McLean. But he'll get himself in there, and he's got two or three headers as well this season by taking a chance. So yeah, I think the issue really is where to use him. Is he a number 10? Is he a orthodox midfielder? I think he's actually a number 8 that would play better in a midfield 3. That's not what Norwich do at the moment, but yeah, he's a player. 5 goals, 5 assists to date. I think he's more than capable of getting the double-double, which I think is quite the feat in terms of goals and assists in a season. So yeah, remember the name. He's still only 24. He barely spoke a word of English when he arrived at Norwich, and he's playing in a struggling side, but he's delivering quite a lot of moments of real quality. A couple of stats. He's created the most chances in the Championship. Pretty good, 47. And only one midfielder sprays more accurate long passes, normally diagonals. Only one midfielder sprays more than him, and it's his teammate, Marcelino Nunez. So he scores, he assists, he sprays the ball around, and he'll get stuck in as well. So yeah, I like him as a player. Gabriel Sara.
All right, we'll keep our eyes peeled for future Sara specials throughout the season. Sam, we're going into League One for your scouting report. It's a Blackpool man on loan from Brest. He made Bromley look like a bunch of tits in the FA Cup.
Yeah, Karamoko Dembele. And if you remember a few years ago, going back some way now, he was all over social media, this lad, when he made his debut, I think, for Celtic's 18s or something at 13 years of age. And I think he went from representing Scotland to representing England in the youth levels. There was some kind of commotion about that as well. But obviously, yeah, a young player that was talked about loads. And I would probably go as far to say, because of the surprise factor, because I've not seen him live, this is the player that's impressed me the most this season. Him and Lavery were the difference in this game. From the off, and I thought the artificial surface at Bromley was going to be a leveller. And I thought, sitting third in the National League, Bromley, really on the up under Andy Woodman, I almost thought they might be favourites for this game. Within 20 minutes, I was like ripping up my notes. Blackpool was so good on the ball. Every department, basically. But these two, so playing wide of a number 9, Kouassi, but Lavery and Dembele, obviously playing off the flanks, but coming in field. So they were playing just one sitting midfield player, Bromley, 3 centre-halves, obviously. Nobody got hold of the situation. Nobody got hold of Dembele in particular, coming in field, off the line, getting into pockets of space. He was getting turned and just ripping, just taking people on at will. Left-footed, but could go onto his right foot as well. Amazing balance, little diminutive guy. Scored a magnificent goal, getting on the half turn exactly in that position. 1-2 with the number 9. Finished on his right foot, I think it was, from an acute angle. And basically, they reacted a little bit towards the end of the first half, Bromley, and put a more defensive player on that side of the pitch in the midfield to get around him a little bit. And someone smashed into him after about half an hour. And I was like, you needed that after 2 minutes. Like, that's 28 minutes too late, because the game's done. And he was playing like it was a training game, honestly. And there was a massive clamour from the Blackpool fans to get him in from the off pre-match. And I think over the course of the last couple of weeks, because I read some stuff and listened to a podcast on the way to the game, and I kind of took it with a pinch of salt, saying Neil Critchley's a bit defensive the way he sets up. And then obviously 10 minutes into this game, I was just like, every supporter that I've read or heard from is got to be bang on here, because this player has got something. Invariably, he blew the proverbial gasket second half, hardly touched the ball, you know, after about 50 minutes. I think he lasted till about 80, maybe odd, but yeah, it wasn't the same threat at all after the break. So it's probably a bit of a fitness issue and something that Neil Critchley will have to improve if he's going to get him in from the off in the league games. But my goodness, what a talent. Thoroughly enjoyed it.
All right, that is Gabriel Sara and Karamoko Dembele, the subjects of this week's scouting report. Before we go, it is tweet of the week time. This comes from Aldershot's Ollie Harfield, who says, all caps, has anyone seen Swindon? 4 exclamation marks, laughing face emoji. Into round 2. What an atmosphere, exclamation mark. What a club, 4 exclamation marks. Red circle, blue circle, at official shots. Adrian. He's invoking the spirit of your TalkSport colleague and mine and Sam's colleague as well, Jason Cundy here. Do you enjoy this one?
No. What a silly... Has anyone seen Swindon? I mean, what does that mean? He's got to go, has anyone seen Sam Parkin? Has anyone seen Don Rogers? Anyone
Willie
seen
Carson.
Colin Calderwood, John Trollope, Kevin Horlock, the Magic Roundabout, Glenn Hoddle, Paul Bowden, Paolo Di Canio? Has anyone seen them? What does it mean? Has anyone seen Swindon? That's rubbish. Sorry.
Wow.
And it's a bit gloaty as well, isn't it? Very gloaty.
Slaughtered. He did subsequently, Sam, tweet four pictures of himself playing in the game with the shots. Are you as upset as Adrian is at this output?
I understand they've got huge listening figures, that show, but I think for your casual fan, that may just go over the head. Do you think they're not, you know, going to be a bit bemused by that first sentence, possibly? Little bit gloaty. Yeah, a little bit unnecessary. And you could question the last sentence, couldn't you? What a club. I mean, you know, is everyone going to, you know, I don't know. How many people are...
Until they release you.
Down on the shots. Yeah. No. Like going out to Aldershot. Lovely pitch, Matt, wasn't it? Lovely pitch.
Oh, always got leaves on the pitch at Aldershot. I remember that.
Because my local club now, Hampton and Richmond, I just basically like any ground that's got trees around it. You know, nice greenery, and Aldershot certainly got that, hasn't it? You're basically finding gardens if you're missing the target. So, yeah, that's nice.
Tony Fredericks, who I think is a Swindon fan because his avatar is just the Swindon badge, has just replied, Muppet. So he's taking it pretty well.
Stronger than where I'd go, but yeah, still enjoyable.
Adrian, tell people about our social media, please.
Yeah, it's at What the EFL on Instagram. Please follow us. It's at What the EFL on TikTok. And on X Twitter, it is at EFL What the. Yeah, we'll put out clips whenever we get time to do so. But it also helps us share the podcast, which lots of you are listening to, which is brilliant. But we want as many EFL fans as possible to get on board. And I know that there are thousands and thousands and thousands of your fellow supporters that don't know what the EFL exists. So hopefully through the power of social media, because we've got no budget to spend on PR, we can get it out there. So yeah, if anyone can retweet and share the links that we send, that'd be amazing.
Yeah, and remember, rating and reviewing the podcast on your platform of choice is a really good way to help other people find us too. We would appreciate that. That'll just about do it for today. Save for a reminder of the offer from our friends at Quinbet. They've enhanced their UK welcome offer. You can now get a free bet worth up to £35. It is for new customers that sign up only. Check out the full terms and conditions at quinbet.com/promotions or use the link provided in the description of this pod. It's 18 plus, and remember, always gamble responsibly. Right, we'll be back same time next week. Have a great week. Until then, enjoy the matches if you go into one. We'll speak to you soon. Bye for now.